I want to thank you for tuning in to Dream Chasers Radio with me, your host, Yaya Diamond. What's up, people? You know I love to do that. Oh my gosh. I have a wonderful, mind-blowing, educational interview for you today. So if you don't want to learn anything, then just tune out. You're still here? Amazing. All right. So we'll be right back with that interview. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the show. Okay, so we have one of these interviews that if you want to learn more, if you want to know more about what's going on, then you need to be right here, right now, listening, because this is the interview that's going to blow your mind. All right. And I'm here with Brian, and we're going to be talking about what he does and all different kinds of things. So Brian Parker, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are we doing today? Great to be here.
Awesome. I'm doing good. I'm ready to be, that whole mind-blowing thing. So go right ahead. Tell us who you are and blow our minds today, because I've already had the pleasure of talking to you.
All right. Well, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to start from the very beginning, before my existence even, to explain where I came from and who I am. My father had about, I would say, 17 years of university in, and I had the pleasure of my bedroom being right across the hallway from where he kept his books at. And so I guess while other kids were reading comic books and things like that, I was digging into his library. He was just a thesis short from a doctorate in divinity. He also studied psychology a lot, worked as a social worker, worked as a probation officer, as a tax assessor, you know, that kind of thing. So I kind of grew up around the mindset of what's going on in this realm and things that are operating behind the scenes. Prior to myself coming along, he was an assistant pastor, or a pastor, at least on the board for Rex Humbard, who was a notable TV evangelist back, I would say, 60s, 70s, all right? And so my household grew up as, I would say, if you made it like a cross between Baptist and, Pentecostal would be the best way to put it, even though that wasn't exactly the way the churches were that I attended. Mm-hmm. Churches I went to were fundamental, non-denominational, evangelical style churches. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's just to kind of give you a mindset of religion wise where I came from. Okay. In growing up, I learned and knew there had to be something else going on. There was something more important happening, something else behind the scenes, really running things other than what we could really see visually with our own eyes. And I believe Paul alluded to that when he talked about principalities and powers in high places. Okay, that's exactly what he's talking about. And it's also led me, because one of the things I've always said to people is, if you're looking for a problem, go back as close to the very beginning as you can of that issue. And that's where you're going to find whether it's the first flaw or whatever it was that really initiated the situation to occur. And for instance, with Paul having said that, you go into the Hebrew and look and see the words that were actually used. And when he talked about powers, it was really translated authorities. Again, there were authorities placed here in different regions of the earth. I believe different continents. I want to look at it this way. You have a hierarchy of authorities. You may have an authority that is over a continent, but then a lesser one that's over maybe a country, lesser ones that are over states, and even lesser ones over counties or communities. Okay. And this was the way it was all arranged from the beginning. This is arranged by the Creator this way. And so we have to kind of keep that in mind, because I think a lot of people are always wanting to know who's at the top of the pyramid. Well, you know, that role top of the pyramid, I think the peak of it is kind of invisible, because there's these authorities that are controlling these people here today. And once we start comprehending some of those principles, different things start making a little more sense.
Yeah.
And there's some very, I think, basic and simple things, you know, things that have perturbed me about, I'll just say, the Christian community, because that's what a lot of people identify as. Myself, I do not identify as a Christian. I will not claim to be a Christian. A friend of mine who is a Baptist preacher, he turned to me here a couple months ago. He goes, "Well, Brian, you're a Christian, aren't you?" And I was like, "No." Man, his eyes got big around. He's like, "What? What are you talking about?" And here's the reason why I don't identify as a Christian. It's because there's over 30,000 denominations of Christianity. Okay. Within those 30,000 denominations, there's going to be even more viewpoints or opinions on what Christianity is within each of those denominations. You know, the same people in the same church don't look at everything the same way. Okay. So if someone was to ask me if I was a Christian, and I was to say yes, then I would be fitting into their box of whatever their definition is. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I prefer really not to do that. That really starts showing us how things really operate under presumption. Okay.
Yeah.
And when I started studying law, I started remembering a lot of things that I learned in school, because I went to this non-denominational school, this Christian school, all my life. Never spent 1 minute in public school. Thank goodness. But that was something that my parents had decided that was not going to happen. You know, they had both taught in the public school system, or the government school system, I prefer to say. And they said their kids were not going to do this. Let me digress just a little bit here and go back a few years. I grew up on Northern Michigan, kitty kitty, and moved to the southern part of the state, kind of traveled the U.S. after graduation, and which led me back to Northern Michigan. I lived on one Indian reservation, worked at two different Indian reservations, and you know, started seeing things from their perspective, what was going on legally with them and stuff. And a lot of that was very mind-opening. While I was up there, however, I was involved in a car accident. And learning afterwards more about it, I guess I was resuscitated three different times, brought back, and spent a month in a coma before really popping out of it and coming back. And my mom at the time had been a program director for a home for head injured people. Mm-hmm. And they had reserved a bed for me, because the doctors had said, if, and it's a big if, he lives, he's going to need to be in one of these facilities the rest of his life.
Wow.
Well, when I did kind of pop out of it, and they told me it was going to be a year before I walked again and 2 years before I got back to work. I said, yeah, I don't think so. Not going to happen. So I set a goal, and within 3 months, I was back to work again.
Wow.
All right. And, you know, it's one of those deals where you've got to kind of learn how to talk, learn how to walk, you know, all that kind of crap again.
Yeah.
But, you know, during that month of not really being here mentally in this realm with everybody, yeah, I kind of saw the other side. And got a view of some of these principalities and powers, or authorities, as it was stated in Hebrew, and saw the general influences and effects of things that they were wanting to do here on Earth and the direction things were moving in. And a lot of it really did not make sense to me at the time. Until I would say maybe even probably the last 5 years, 6 years, it's like, wow, I start remembering things that I had seen. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, wow, now I understand why that was shown to me. You know what I mean? It's not a big surprise. You know what I mean? And I'm able to recognize it for what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe instead of being like surprised and blown away, going, "What the heck's going on here?" You know, no, I have a pretty good comprehension of what's happening. So,
wow.
And you know, that always makes me think back to people saying things like, you know, what do you regret in life? Or if you could change something, what's the one thing you would change? Myself, I don't really think I would change anything. Even a situation like that, as horrible as it was, what I had put my mom and dad through, you know, and put my family through, I still would not change it, because everything that happens to us, whether it's good, whether it's awesome, beautiful, whether it's horrible, you know, whether it's, you know, life-threatening, all of these things make us who we are today. And we wouldn't be who we are today without those things happening in our life.
Yeah.
And they happen for a reason, not necessarily by our choice, but they happen for a reason. And we've got to make the best out of it and use those as learning moments for ourselves. Because it's going to help us also learn how to move forward. Definitely. With what we're doing.
Definitely. Wow, definitely. So within all of the time that you were gone, and now that you're back, what has been, has the direction that you were going in changed, and how?
I don't see the direction as a whole of things really changing. If you study history, and you know, I took this time off that we had while businesses were closed down to really do some deep studying the things that I was interested in. And I wanted to study what was supposedly called the Dark Ages, if they ever really even existed, and what was going on, you know, the rise and fall of nations, why they rose, why they fell, what the people were going through and what their attitudes were, and gives you a bigger picture regarding the whole of our time here, and seeing the progression that, you know, these authorities, they could maybe snap their fingers and have something happen overnight, but their preference is for it to be gradual, you know, kind of like the frog boiling in the water, you know.
Yeah.
Have everything be slow and gradual. They don't care if it happens this year, 10 years from now, or 100 years from now, as long as it's eventually going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that I have seen change regarding, you know, people's attitudes, say 500-600 years ago, or maybe even a couple hundred years ago, as to compared to today, is that today people are realizing, I think, two essential things. One, they're realizing the power that they have inside themselves, and they're realizing the power that they have, like, in a community,
right,
or with other like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to say, wait a minute here, if we join together, this is really where we have our strength at.
Right.
If you go back to, I think it was the older 1938 edition of the Florida Constitution, and I've seen this in the original constitutions for the different states, mm-hmm. within the first couple paragraphs, they all stated that free men have rights when they come together, which made me stop and think, you know, because you have to read law forwards and backwards. What else does that mean? Okay. Mm-hmm. Sure, we have rights when we unite, when we come together. But that also means that if we don't unite, if we do not come together, we don't have rights.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people are realizing that. And I'm seeing more and more little groups start to sprout up, whether they're totally correct in their philosophy or not, you know, is really neither here nor there. It's just the fact that there are these people that are starting to unite, these people that are starting to come together.
Mm-hmm.
And I would give one warning to any of these groups, and I don't really want to mention some of them by name, but I think people will know, you know, the ones I'm referring to. These groups, when they come together and they say provide educational platforms, whether they're talking about astrotheology, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. The one slip point, the one weak link that has always existed in things like this is when one individual tries to stand up and take the reins. Mm-hmm. And they want to micromanage everything and be in charge and stuff like that. Because what will happen is that these principalities and powers or these earthly authorities, if they want to nix one of these groups of people who are coming together and actually having rights by coming together, all they have to do is take out the figurehead. Mm-hmm. Take out that one man, that one woman or whoever. Hmm. And it puts everybody in fear. Mm-hmm. I'll name, for instance, the situation with Turner, with the California Republic.
Okay.
They knocked him out. And they still exist, but the people all kind of ran in fear. They've kind of gone silent and gone quiet, the majority of them. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why. You can't hang your hat on one individual. Right. You have to realize that the strength is in the community of people. Right. The strength is within the assembly, and it's all as strong as its single parts are.
Right, right. Yeah. So, okay, so we're talking about groups. So why Unguru?
Well, I think Unguru is going to be an excellent platform for people to come and learn things at. It's not going to be set up the way that, you know, I warned against. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's really going to be beautiful the way Unguru, I think, is being put together, is because we all have different topics of interest.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Some people are, especially right now, are going to have a lot of questions when it comes to medical things, for instance.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They want to learn how to be healthy. They want to learn how to eat right. They want to learn, for instance, maybe how to get toxins or things that have been put inside of them, out of them, mm-hmm. stuff like that. There's going to be people that want to look into like real history, for instance.
Okay.
And there's going to be somebody for each of those things. Mm-hmm. There's going to be people that are interested in, say, alchemy, frequency, and how those affect our life. Mm-hmm. There should be somebody there that'll be available that can teach on that. So people can kind of look through the categories of the topics that interest them mm-hmm. and that they think would best help them with where they're at in life. And they can focus on that instead mm-hmm. of just going to the platform and just being offered up, you know, whatever the soup du jour is, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Instead, you know, as an individual going there are going to be in control of your own education. And that's one of the things it kind of sticks in my craw a little bit with a lot of people is they complain about our education and they want to say, oh, we were lied to or this, or that, you know, we need to realize one thing. And that is there is only one person responsible for our education and that's us. We are the only ones responsible for it. Mm-hmm. And our education is supposed to lead us to knowledge.
Yeah.
Instead, we sit back and get spoon-fed a bunch of bull crap, and it becomes the foundation of our beliefs. Mm-hmm. Not our knowledge, our beliefs. And a belief is nothing more than opinion. And it stands on nothing. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that we actually gain knowledge of the facts, what the case really is.
Right.
And instead of standing on something that we can't even defend.
You know, you said education. So this actual program is going to be founded on a better system where we can educate ourselves. So who created the educational system that we have now?
Well, you know, we can look at like the surface stories as to what happened. Say, for instance, medical education was created by Rockefeller. He funded the schools and started the universities for that.
Right.
He actually also started the public school system. It was called the country school, I think is what it was called. And that eventually morphed into what is the public school today. Because at one time, yeah, originally people really were just being educated by their grandparents or their parents, you know, within the home. A lot of education was also happening, you know, within the churches and things like that. But then again, if you want to look at where they got the basis for the public school from, this was taken out of the Prussian Empire. And it was the Prussian school system that they adopted, which, incidentally, their school system was probably the worst aspect of the Prussian Empire. But somehow we chose to do that. So, yeah, so that's where we've gotten things at today. And, you know, you can even see in school, it's all about following a certain order, you know, standing in line. You go to your own desk. Everybody does things at a certain time. And it was really the beginning of teaching socialism in America and establishing a socialist mindset. I remember here, it was probably 10 years ago, my girlfriend had three children, and we would take, you know, a couple weeks before school every year to go get school supplies and things like that. And I remember one year we had taken them, and they each got their own backpack. They each got their own notebooks, their own pens, erasers, you name it. Okay. And that evening before school, on the night before school was to start, I went into the bedroom, and the kids had their backpacks all unpacked, and they're all sitting on their bed, and they had their pens lined up, their notebooks lined. They were proud that this is my stuff. Okay. You know, this is the beginning of life where we actually start being somebody, where we start having our own things. And these were going to be the tools they were going to use for the rest of the year. Well, the next day the kids came home from school, and I noticed the youngest one was kind of down in the dumps a little bit. And I pulled her aside and I said, "Cass, what's wrong? You know, this is your first day of school. Is there a problem? You know, what's going on?" And she first didn't really want to talk about it, but, you know, I nudged her a little bit. And she's like, "Well, Brian," she said, "here's what happened. When we got to school this morning, we had to empty out our backpacks. And we had to give the teacher all of our paper, all of our pens, all of our school supplies."
No.
And she took them all and she put them into a closet and put the notebooks with the notebooks, the pencils with the pencils, the pens with the pens, and said that they would be doled out during the year as kids needed them. Because there were some kids in the classroom who necessarily couldn't afford, didn't have parents that could afford to supply them with these things.
No.
And, you know, that obviously is teaching socialism, or, you know, if you want to get around to it, communism, you know what I mean? And do I think that was wrong? Am I saying that we're not supposed? No, absolutely. We're supposed to take care of each other. Let me tell you something. Each one of those children that I raised, if one of the other kids sitting next to them in school or in the classroom, if they had needed a notebook, if they needed a piece of paper, if they needed a pen, if you know what, they would have given it. Obviously they would have given it up. But on top of it, I want, you know, stop and think of the taxes or the millage that keeps getting raised every year because, the schools, the public school is operating in a deficit this year. We're going to have to raise the millage. You know what I mean? Well, okay. Well, where's this money going? Obviously, I guess it's not going to the school supplies, is it? So whose pocket is this going into?
I think that that was wrong. Literally, they should have just said, "Hey, if somebody next to you doesn't have a piece of paper or a pen, please let them borrow it and we'll take care of the situation a little bit later." You know, a lot of parents give their children extra notebooks nowadays to give it. I've never had a teacher do that. That's just, to me, that was just all wrong. That took away the pride that that child had for that class. Now that teacher is just a thief.
Absolutely.
"You just took my stuff." You know, my mom paid for that. My dad paid for that. That's not yours.
Yep. They bought it for me, not for you. Exactly. Well, and here's the issue is that having students in the classroom that are in need of things or whatever, I think the system looks at it as a negative thing. Myself, I look at it as a positive thing, because here the teachers would have a chance for a teachable moment with the students as far as taking care of your neighbor. Instead, they turned it around and said, no, what you're going to do is you're going to rely on Big Brother to take care of everything for you.
Wow. So, okay. So I know that Unguru has educational platforms. Are you going to be teaching?
Yes, I'm going to, be helping out with various things, maybe in the lawful category. As far as your relationship, say, with these authorities, maybe even how you can, form your own little associations. When I really first started researching the law aspects of things, is when, like I mentioned before, kind of a light bulb came on from things that I had learned in school. Because, of course, I had to memorize like chapters of the Bible, towards, school credit and things like that. And when I say memorize them, I mean, you had to write it down. You could only have three errors. And that also included punctuation and capitalization. So you knew what you were, writing down. And a lot of things is kind of like didn't make sense. It kind of was somewhat confusing. And I found it interesting that when I started studying like our relationship with the state, I recommend people read, for instance, the book, The Law of Nations. Okay. Great resource material. Excellent resource material. It's actually four books compiled into one. It's, I believe, pushing 800 pages long. Wow. So I know it's, and it doesn't have pictures in it. So it's a lot to digest. So I would recommend if people want, you can go online and look up the preliminaries for the Law of Nations, okay? And read the preliminaries. It's about 12 pages. And I'll wrap your mind around it. But when I started studying these things, a lot of those things that I had learned in school and had read in scripture, all of a sudden was like, oh, I've seen this before. How do I know this? You know what I mean?
Right.
One of probably the biggest light bulb moments for me was, in realizing that, the adversary can't create anything on his own. He only mimics things. He mirrors things, He never said he'd be greater than God. He said he'd become like God. He'd become like the Most High. He can't be, the creation can't be greater than the Creator, And I talked about going back to the beginning of things. And so that's what I did, like, say, for the United States. I went back to Title I, started in the United States Code, and started reading Title I. And when I was reading there, I remember reading it and thinking, gosh, I know this. How do I know this? And I went back and read it a second time. I'm like, gosh, I know this from somewhere. A couple days later, I went back and I was reading it a third time, and I was partway through, and I'm like, I know this story. I exactly know this story. This is the first chapter of Genesis. This is establishing jurisdiction, whether it's jurisdiction over land or over the fish, over the people. This is, establishment of jurisdiction. Right. So what was done? Just a mirror of what the Creator had done. Just a duplication of it.
Right.
So, and, so I always kind of kept that in the back of my mind with different categories dealing with law, and started seeing examples of it over and over again. And people need to realize something. I'm not speaking from a religious point of view. I am very anti-religious. Religion is made by man. It's twisted by man, and it's used to control other men with. Okay. There's a big difference between religious and spirituality. Correct. Big difference between the two. And whether people want to believe in a creator or believe in the Bible or Buddha or whatever the case may be, that's up to you whether you want to believe in it or not. In fact, the system would rather you be an atheist. They would rather you not believe in it. Why? Because they absolutely do believe in it, and they follow those principles. And so if you weren't to believe in it and not study those principles, that just means that's all the more authority that they have over you.
Right.
Because they're keeping you in the dark, you know, treating you like a mushroom, you know.
Wow.
I think probably one of the best ones to identify regarding that would be, say, with banking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Scripture teaches that the borrower is servant to the debtor. I mean, the borrower is servant to the lender, you know. Mm-hmm. So the master that's handing out the benefits, he's the one in charge. And if you're receiving these benefits, then guess what? You hold liability.
Mm-hmm.
So it's on my hat here, liability. Right. That's what everybody is the most afraid of. That's the reason why insurance runs the world. Ask Walter Burian, who showed the CAFA reports, showed the double set of books that the governments use, that they probably learned it from Capone about. Hmm. But he'll even tell you, yeah, the world's not run by banks. It's run by insurance. Hmm. And at the heart of it's really because people don't want liability. Hmm. So with a bank account, for instance, one of the things I recommend is that you open a non-interest bearing account. Why is that? Because if you're receiving interest, I don't care if it's just pennies a year, you're receiving a benefit,
mm-hmm.
which means that now you are going to be liable to the lender.
Right.
And you're going to have a liability to the banks.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't get into details here, but there's many things that I've done with my account to prove that you've severed liability once that's done.
Right.
Now you're working more as a partner with the bank rather than as the debtor.
Mm-hmm.
Because this system, you know, you read the United States Code, it really always refers to the citizen or the people as a debtor. And once again, this is another example of the mirroring effect that the great adversary did. Because according to scripture, one of the control mechanisms is you're the sinner, all right? I think we all probably would know Edwards' great sermon, you know, sinners in the hands of an angry God, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always this fear factor involved with mm-hmm. you and I as being the sinner. And then you look at the state and you're not the sinner anymore. Now you're the debtor. They call you the debtor. Well, sinner and debtor are synonymous with each other. You know, they mean the same thing.
Mm.
And, you know, it's actually kind of interesting. I brought up Edwards. Edwards died as a result of getting a jab because he was trying to show everybody, yeah, it's okay to get this. It'll help prevent this illness. And I think he died within like 2 weeks of getting it. So there's nothing new under the sun. And this happened, what, over 100 years ago, close to 100 years ago. So, yeah.
Wow. Wow. Well, there's so much to learn and there's so much to do, and you're going to be teaching at Unguru, and that's going to be amazing. I think that that's going to be an amazing class that people need to be taking. How can they reach you and how can they get to Unguru?
Unguru, I don't think the platform has been made public yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it will shortly.
Okay.
And like I said, that different topics in Unguru, you know, whether you want to learn about history or being healthy or law, like I said, they're all going to be divided up. Well, the same structure is being used like with the platform that I've got on Unguru, mm-hmm. is that it's going to be divided up as well.
Okay.
So if you looked at my platform, there's different topics or whatever that I cover. You can go and pick one of them out. And it's also going to supply you with, you know, material to read, things to find out about. And what they're doing, there's going to be basically two different levels from what I'm being told with the platform, the way I think it's going to be set up. There's basically going to be a free side. People mm-hmm. can come on, look at what they want, grab what they can. But people that want to dig deeper, it's going to be very, very inexpensive to join like one of the little classes or something. You know what I mean?
Awesome.
That way, you know, some of these people, it's like you go in, you pay $500 and you get thrown all this stuff. Well, this is going to be more like a la carte.
Gotcha.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
to where you can pick out the little things, even within the subtopics that you're interested in, and just pay very little for each small amount.
I got you. Okay. Yeah. That's going to be amazing. Wow. With Unguru. It's going to be unguruyourlife.com. And we're going to have all of that information in the description box below. Along, Brian is going to be a teacher. You guys are going to be blown away by what he knows. And man, the man, he knows so much that, okay, just put, that's how I say it. Just your mind will be blown. That's it. That's it. And it's just, it's going to be a wonderful platform, like you said, and it's going to be a la carte. So everybody can learn what they need to learn. And if you want to refresh, you can always refresh. Brian, are there any, you know, any suggestions for people who want to, you know, kind of like separate themselves?
I would say as far as separating yourself, some people call it status correction. Mm-hmm. I call it correcting the presumption, because everything's done under presumption of law. Right. And the reason why it's done under presumption of law is because nobody has come forward and really stated who and what they are and what they're doing. I mean, what do you ask whenever you go into a new country? They want to know who you are, where you're going, what you plan on doing, how long you plan on staying. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they really require the same thing from us. If they're not afforded that information, then they have to operate under presumption.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that would be step one, is comprehending that and looking at things as far as the direction of property goes, because all they do is dictate what happens with property. Mm-hmm. If you look at what happens, for instance, with courts, the only thing courts really do is enforce contracts.
Right.
Okay. When you go to the heart of any matter, that's what they're really doing, is enforcing a contract. And, you know, I like to tell people, if you're going to teach your children one thing in growing up, I think one of the first things everybody should be taught is that, for instance, whenever your signature is required for something, there's a contract in place. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason why the signature would be needed. It's because there's a contract. Well, how many people ask for the contract? Nobody does. Really, because we don't even think about things from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. I remember going into the DMV one time, Department of Motor Vehicles, and I asked them, I said, hey, when I sign this, that means I'm agreeing to a bunch of stuff, right? They're like, yeah. I said, well, do you have a copy of what I'm agreeing to? So I, you know, somebody could read it before they sign their name. Well, I don't know. I think it might be online. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I'd kind of like to identify that's really big, I would say, maybe within the truth movement, is people are always pushing the idea of disclosure and full disclosure. Well, I wasn't given full disclosure. Mm-hmm. Well, this goes back to education. Who's responsible for your education? You are. Mm-hmm. Well, when it comes back to the disclosure, who's responsible to receive it? You are. Mm-hmm. They're not required to give you full disclosure and tell you everything right up front. There's no requirement for that.
Yeah.
Unless you ask them. Unless you ask them. Now, if you ask them for a full disclosure, now they've got to provide disclosure to you. Mm-hmm. Okay. But until then, it's not necessary. Mm. And too many people hang their hat on the fact that no full disclosure was offered. Right. When in fact, the problem is they never asked for it. Mm. You know, so.
Wow. So the suggestion is, if you signed your signature on anything, get a full disclosure. Get Absolutely. A copy of it. Awesome. Well, Brian, thank Absolutely. You so much. Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you because I you know, you got something else. Go do it.
No, not necessarily. We could do something kind of fun here.
Okay, go ahead.
That a lot of people don't think about from like a scriptural standpoint. Mm-hmm. In the book of Timothy, it says that the scripture needs to be rightly divided. I think we've all heard, you know, that passage. Mm-hmm. And people use that passage, rightly divided, I think, in order to morph and twist scripture to mean what they want it to mean, or to validate their life. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to look a little bit closer at that passage, that scripture needs to be rightly divided. Can you tell me how many words are in the book of Genesis?
No.
How about Exodus?
No.
So you definitely couldn't tell me the Torah as a whole, how many words there are in it.
No. It might even be different depending on what version you're reading.
No, it's the same.
Okay.
In the original Hebrew, in fact, all of scripture, a lot of people say the Old Testament was Hebrew, the New Testament was Greek. That's not true. It was all Hebrew. All right. But that's just aside. Yeah. In the Hebrew, just taking the Torah, for instance, the amount of words in the Torah is very simple. There's one word. And the reason why there is only one word is because they didn't use upper and lower case. They didn't use punctuation. They didn't use word breaks. It was one letter stacked behind the next, a whole string of letters. Mm. So in order to comprehend what that scripture was talking about, or what the book of Genesis or the Torah was, how it read, what did you have to do? You had to rightly divide. Because if you didn't rightly divide those letters and form words, you weren't going to know what it was trying to tell you.
I gotcha. Okay.
And now, and it can be wrongly divided as well. And maybe it was. Take the story of Joseph and the coat of many colors, for instance. Mm-hmm. Okay. That was all same thing. One string of letters.
Okay.
It had to be divided out and punctuated in order to get the story. Mm-hmm. Now, if you change that story and divided those letters differently, instead of having a coat of many colors, what you end up with instead is that Joseph's father gave him a golden calf, or gave him a golden idol. Mm. And it was this golden idol that the brothers were jealous about. Mm. And if you read even later on, it was one of the women, when she was pregnant, sat on that golden idol while she was pregnant. You know, that kind of relates back to the story and said, whoa, wait a minute.
Right.
Did that not get rightly divided when it was translated? You know what I mean? So, yeah, there's just so many little things like that we don't pay attention to, things that we take for granted. And I think more than anything, I would say today, people need to start taking things for granted. We've had the past year where you could have turned off your TV and you could have sat and read the white pages and read the journals and listened to what doctors say to each other, because guess what? They don't lie to each other. Mm-hmm. In fact, they have to sign off on each other's white pages, okay? They tell each other the truth. They may go on TV the next day and say something completely opposite, all right? That they don't care amongst each other. They don't care if you're lying to the public, who cares? But they tell the truth to each other. Mm-hmm. And people would see a much different picture if they just went and read the white pages on things. Mm-hmm. Quit taking things for granted, I think, is something that people need to really learn today. If they don't learn anything else, learn to stop taking things for granted. Do your own learning, do your own research, and be your own guru, period.
That's right. Wow. Well, Mr. Parker, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate it. And I did not know about that in the scriptures. I'm going to have to go ahead and study now, because that just opens up a whole new thing for me. And like I said, that's my mind right now. You blew it. It's something fun. It was like, so you've opened up my eyes even more. And thank you so much again for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You have a blessed day. Glad to be here.
You too. And thank you guys so much for tuning in to Dream Chasers Radio. Don't forget to ungurulife.com. They will be having all of that stuff up. We're going to put that down in the description box, as well as right above. If you're watching on YouTube, you will see the link to go to the first interviews and the first talk. It was amazing. And I just had a wonderful time. And also tune in. We have some more stuff coming up from ungurulife.com. And until next time, guys, don't forget to dare to be different. Ooh, yeah.
I dare to be different.